Set your course for the Hoth system. General Veers, prepare your men.
All troops will debark for ground assault. Prepare to target the main generator.
Echo Station 3TA.
On an Imperial Walker.
Attack pattern Delta. Go now. Watch that clock fire, boys. Right now, I feel like I could take on the whole Empire myself.
Target, maximum firepower.
Imperial troops have entered the bay. Imperial troops have entered.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Echo Base. This is the first episode after the release of Episode 8, The Force Awakens, and we are very excited about it. This is December 18th, 2017. I'm Eric. I'm joined tonight by Lou. Lou, how you doing?
I am doing great.
All right. We are also joined in his first return to podcasting post-surgery, I believe, Tim. And I point that out because I hope he's like doped up on some serious pain meds, because that would be awesome.
No serious pain meds right now. I'm reserving those for after we record. Probably within half an hour or 45 minutes of me taking those, I'll be fast asleep.
About a half hour after listening to Lou and I on the podcast, you'll be in a lot of pain too. So that would be a good time.
You'll need that drugs. Yeah.
Right.
Assuming we didn't live closer because we could share,
but no, we did record Random Chatter last night. So,
yes.
That's true. Yeah. Is that your first podcast since then? Yeah.
Oh, that's true. The first one I've
Echo
been
Base.
On.
With, yeah.
Well, actually, you know what? Echo Base gets posted. Does it get posted the day? No, it gets posted on Thursday. Random Chatter is up on Wednesday. So the people listening to this, Random Chatter came out yesterday. So I can't even spin it that way. Okay. No, I'm just
that's all right.
And it won't be the first time this episode. There's a lot of stuff to talk about.
There is a lot of stuff to talk about in this episode. And we have had an incredibly active Slack channel.
Wow.
Talking about The Last Jedi.
Incredibly active Slack channels.
Yeah.
Talking about The Last Jedi.
Obviously, social media has been going crazy. I've probably, like you guys, I've gotten texts and phone calls from friends. And probably like a lot of our listeners, too. So it's just there's just so much out there right now. And and it kind of covers the whole spectrum. I mean, there's some people who really didn't like it. There's some people who really, really did like it. I said in the little bit that I recorded that you guys tagged at the end of the last episode, which thank you, by the way, for doing that.
No problem.
I liked it, but I have some reservations, which I think will be cleared up with the second viewing. And I'm pretty confident with that because a lot of people have said a second viewing has really cleared up reservations that they've had. So,
yes, I saw my second viewing earlier today, in fact.
Good.
And I feel like there are some definitely some things it clears up. If we get a chance in this episode, if we have enough time, I might mention some of them. But if not, I know that once you and Lou see it a second time, we're going to come back and talk more about. We've already covered our initial thoughts. We're going to talk about our thoughts a little bit more in depth, but we also need to cover this big rift that's going on in the fan community.
Yeah.
This episode is going to be a little bit more news heavy because Rian Johnson has come out and said a lot of things about the film. We're going to talk about a lot of that. Plus, of course, there's the box office results too. But yeah, the fan community is definitely an interesting place at the moment. And
right.
I kind of feel like we're seeing the whole prequel thing happen all over again. And it's in my opinion, there are basically the same issues at the core. It's just wrapped up in different clothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It does feel very similar. Yeah.
Do we want to, before we go any further, do we want to just throw a spoiler warning as a blanket over this whole episode?
I think we have to. Yeah. There's everything that's newsworthy this week, except the box office results, are definitely spoiler ridden. So you can hang around for the box office news if you want and listen to us chat a little bit longer. But really, this is for people who have seen The Last Jedi already. If you have not,
go see it.
Go see it.
Yeah, exactly. Needless to say that this was a huge opening. It was the second largest opening ever for a movie, any movie, not just Star Wars, not just December, any movie ever. So $45 million on Thursday, only behind The Force Awakens. $105 million on Friday, behind The Force Awakens, of course. $220 for the whole weekend.
Wow.
The Force Awakens was $248, so it was pretty close. I didn't think it was going to be that close at all, but it was definitely right up there. So, $450 million worldwide opening, which puts it in fifth place. TFA was second at $549. Harry Potter was number four. Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows Part 2 was number four at $483. Jurassic World was $525. And in the lead, which I'm surprised about this one, Fate of the Furious at $542. I didn't realize that was the biggest opening worldwide.
That's ever. An embarrassment of human civilization. That truly is.
I mean, I guess you could say maybe that the Fate of the Furious has a broader fan base, maybe, I guess, but
I don't know.
Can't really spin that one.
Go ahead, folks. Tim at randomchatter.com. Seriously, hate me for that if you want to, but that's just wrong. It's absolutely wrong.
Yeah. So The Last Jedi is currently the number 10 for the year, which is amazing, after only 3 days plus a few hours on Thursday. I think it's going to be the biggest movie of the year. I don't see any problem with that. Do you, Tim?
No. It definitely is the highest opening for the year. It did beat out, I heard this morning that it did beat out, what was the top opener for the year? Beauty and the Beast.
Okay.
Which still, and I know we've been saying this for the last 3 months, but it feels so weird that Beauty and the Beast was actually this year, but it was early enough in the year.
Yeah, it seems like it was a long time ago. Yeah.
Definitely. It's gotten so much hype. I think I've seen it twice since then, since it's come out, and I never saw it in the theater, but I've seen it on, I saw it on an airplane once, and I think I saw it on demand at home maybe a couple weeks ago. But
yeah, I haven't seen it at all, but.
So the Last Jedi is certainly the leader for opening weekends, for the year. And there's no doubt here recording on the 18th of December that pretty much every single day it's going to overtake one or two films.
Oh yeah, yeah. It'll be the biggest movie of the year. It'll be the biggest movie of the year probably within a couple of days. I don't think it's going to take that long to really put it past everything else.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to save the community controversy for next week, I think. But we did want to point out The Last Jedi has the second highest rating on Rotten Tomatoes ever for a Star Wars movie, at least for the critic score. It started out as the highest. It was initially 96%. It's at 93% right now, following Empire Strikes Back with 94%. So that's really, really close.
Oh, yeah.
The critics love this movie. The audience score, however, was a little bit different. It has the lowest audience score on Rotten Tomatoes of any of the Star Wars movies. However, there's a lot of evidence out there that would support the theory that that might have been skewed. I don't want to say hacked, but basically social hacking. It was.
Yeah.
There were some groups out there from 4chan and Reddit who were actually organizing to try to vote this down to, quote, put those Star Wars fans in their place. The CinemaScore, which is where they interview people coming out of the films, was rated an A. So all of the other indicators that are popping up that are rating audience reactions seem to be really favorable. It's just the Rotten Tomatoes score that seems to be so low.
Sure. So. And I was truly surprised to see those numbers the next day. You know, when I was starting to look at things on Friday, I was like, what? Did I see the wrong movie? I mean, you know, it seemed arbitrarily low. It just seemed really off.
Yeah. There's also rumors of some folks who have created bots to do some to vote it down on some of these audience scores across Rotten Tomatoes and maybe even other platforms. Obviously that stuff is really unfortunate. There are things, and you guys discussed a lot of the stuff in the last episode. I didn't get into any spoilery remarks in my comments, but I mentioned there are a couple things that I really, really didn't like. And then there were maybe a handful of things that I was kind of iffy on. But overall, I liked it. And, you know, really what it comes down to, and I think there's there are a lot of reasonable people out there that we've seen in Slack and on social media and amongst us who we've given some critical commentary, but that's because that's who we are. And we can be critical of it without sticking a knife in its back.
Yeah, there's a difference between analysis
and
just complaining, I guess.
Yeah.
For the sake of complaining.
And we can talk about the things that we don't like, and we can talk about the things that we do like. And a lot of times, unfortunately, we do kind of default to the things that we don't like because those are the things that kind of bother us a little bit. They're nagging us in the head a bit. So that's what we go after. But
well, remember the old Saturday Night Live sketches? And I wasn't even watching SNL back at this point, but Chris Farley would be this kind of nerdy guy. He'd be interviewing someone and it'd be like, I'll just make something up, like Bruce Willis. And he'd be like, hey, remember that scene from Die Hard where like you had the fire hose and you fell off the side of the building and broke into the window? And Bruce Willis would be like, yeah, I remember that. Chris Farley would be like, yeah, that was cool. So sometimes there's only so much you can say about the good things. And really it's the negative things that kind of naturally involve further discussion and further analysis. So they take up a larger portion of the time, even if they don't necessarily take up a bigger portion of your opinion.
Sure.
So I wanted to read, we don't really have a listener feedback section in this episode because it's already going to be running long, and holy cow, we'd have to hire about 12 assistants to go through all of the conversations in Slack right now. But
a handful of emails we've gotten too.
Yeah. Yeah. But there was one that really stuck out to me. This is from Bob, and he put in Slack. I asked him permission to paraphrase this a little bit for language, but he said, I think I 70% love it and 30% hate it, but it isn't the sort of split where it ends up middling. It's like being at a party with seven of your best friends and three absolute idiots. You can be having a lovely time, but every now and then you end up spending a few minutes with a jerk.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's okay. It was more good than bad. It was like, it was really, really good and really bad, but more really, really good. So you hit both sides of that pendulum there.
I think that's a really fair analogy to this.
Yeah,
I think it really is.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so the funny thing about it is,
before we move on. Oh, go ahead.
I was just saying, the funny thing about it is, you know, there's some things that you can dislike that were a choice the filmmaker made as far as maybe content. There's also people that dislike, well, I didn't like that scene because I didn't like the special effects, or I didn't like the way it was acted. You know, I mean, overall, I thought the movie was put together well. It was done really well.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't agree with all the choices they went with in the way the story turned, but not enough to make it, you know, the lowest Star Wars movie of all time, or just, you know, a 53%, in my opinion. It just didn't seem that bad.
No,
this was obviously the gap. The breadth of the gap there, this had to be orchestrated. But the one thing I'm really curious about, and we'll probably never find out, is how much the audience score ended up affecting kind of the groupthink of the average person on the internet. Like, you know, everybody else is complaining about it, I'm going to complain about it too. And it kind of getting wrapped up in the complaints beyond the actual scope of the actual issue. Like, you get kind of emotionally wrapped up in it sometimes. I'm wondering how much that damning score might actually be affecting, if not people's opinions, then how they present their opinions. I'm really curious about that.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
But we have the rest of the news basically is stuff that Rian Johnson has said in various different interviews. We're going to kind of go quickly through a few of them because the last two, I think, are pretty darn controversial. So first off, Rian Johnson has confirmed that there are a lot of deleted scenes. Now, I had initially read an interview where he quoted 30 minutes. Making Star Wars is saying 20 minutes, though I didn't see that as part of the interview that they had clipped. But a couple of the scenes he pointed out, Finn, Rose, and DJ maneuvering through the mega Star Destroyer through Snoke's ship.
Mm-hmm.
Luke and Rey doing more on the island. Apparently there were some kind of some trials that Ray went through, and there were a few really, really emotional scenes, Johnson said.
That would definitely be cool to see more of.
Definitely. Yeah. And those will apparently be on the DVD and Blu-ray.
And I think those may add a little bit more context to their relationship.
Yeah. Which I think is always going to end up being a good thing.
Yeah.
So, also The Last Jedi, just as a side note, will be the first Star Wars movie to be released on 4K Blu-ray. If you have a 4K UHD television set. So
nice.
There will not be a director's cut. This is the director's cut. This is the definitive version that Rian Johnson had. So don't be expecting there to be some kind of extended version or something like that.
Cool.
Rian said that there were no changes to Leia's scenes, primarily because he and the powers that be at Lucasfilm decided it was best to keep Carrie Fisher's complete performance in the film.
Yeah, I heard that also.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting. And it makes he must have had a conversation with JJ, and obviously JJ is a producer in this. And I'm sure there was we know that there was a high level discussion after Carrie's death.
Yeah.
About how they wanted to handle things. And it's interesting because that basically leaves dealing with her death in JJ's lap. And as a bit of speculation, my guess is really the only way they can deal with it is between the movies. So it's either going to be in the crawl that there was some sort of, you know, they found a base and then there was some sort of an attack by the First Order and General and or Princess Leia got killed. Or they will have something in the opening scene which will kill her, but she'll basically be killed off camera.
And this is just my opinion, I think they're going to do something kind of similar to what you're talking about, but given the whole, we're going to talk about this later, because again, we're not going to have time in this episode, but the scene where she's out in space after the bridge blows and she uses the Force to pull herself back in, that's a really hard thing to recover from, as in you can't. So it would not surprise me if they open up episode 9 and we discover that she from the injuries she sustained physiologically through that process, you know, yeah, she made it to Crait. She made it through the end of the battle, but she just, her body is just starting to break down and then she dies off screen before episode 9. And I'm sure that the resistance will end up wherever it is they're going to go to be stationed out of for their next location will probably involve them, you know, setting up some sort of a memorial scene or a burial or something like that. That might be the opening ship that we come to at episode 9, is some sort of approach to wherever it is they're going. And then they proceed with this ceremony and that's the opening.
Yeah.
But yeah, they've got recasting isn't going to work.
No.
They've already said they're not going to do CG. So regardless of how they do it. Yeah. Tim, you're right. They've got to either kill her right at the beginning that sounds so crass for me to say it that way. I'm sorry, but they've either got to have the character die at the beginning or in between the movies.
Yeah,
I just hope no matter what they do, they find a way to do it that leaves us satisfied.
I don't
want to say it's all about us, but you know, find a way to make it
look
so
at the internet,
palatable
Lou.
For us. That's true. Yeah,
you will love it. Tim will hate it. Tim will love it. I will hate it. I will love it. You will hate it. It's gonna be. You know, if you sit down and look at it, it's going to make sense from a certain point of view. And the amount of people who are going to share that point of view will be a small percentage.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they are in a lose-lose situation there. And they were in a lose-lose situation about anything they did with her in this film, too. But even more so with the next one. It's going to be, we're guaranteed a fan riot. If there are 100 different ways to do it, then... You know, whatever they choose, 99% of the fandom is going to think it should have been one of the other 99 options. It's
true
how it is.
I mean, honestly, I believe that it should have happened when she was sucked out into the vacuum of space. I think that should have been it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I agree.
And I truly thought it was. And I think we said this in random chat last night. When they zoomed in on her in the debris field, I'm like, oh, now we have to do a sentimental scene showing her, you know, passing. And then they opened her eyes. I'm like, oh, no. You know, I was like, I was hoping it was going to be the end because I didn't want to think about it the rest of the movie. It was distracting with, you know, how it was going to happen. I'm like, oh, good. They're getting it kind of out of the way early. That was my take on it. But
the only loss in doing it that way would have been it was very emotionally satisfying to see her and Luke connect again at the end of the movie.
Yeah. When you said that, the other night, I totally agree with that, Eric. That definitely was a big thing.
That being said, I agree with you guys. I think it would have served the story better, given the circumstances, to have that be her final scene. And, you know, we don't get the fan emotional satisfaction of the two of them meeting up at the end of the film, but that's just how it goes. So,
and I also think it would be a better motivator for Kylo Ren, even though he is not the one who pulled the trigger. He very obviously did not. He was so reluctant to do so. The other two ties that were in his formation did. And so he would still carry a lot of burden of that, being that he was right there when this happened. But then he did find out, right, that she survived. Or he was able to feel in the Force that she survived. So now she's going to die later in something that doesn't have really anything to do with him. It seems to take that away from his character.
I don't think that's meaningful. I know he sensed that she was there. Mm. I don't know that he ended up sensing her anytime after that.
Mm.
I don't think, and again, I just saw it a second time a few hours ago. Nothing comes to mind that indicates that he sensed that she was still around after that.
Okay. I'll have to look out for that next time I watch it to see if there is something in there that some indicator that he does know that she's alive.
Yeah. Next up is a controversial one, but not the big one that we're talking about. Ryan Johnson has confirmed that in his mind, Kylo Ren was telling the truth about Rey's parents. The quote he gave was, "I don't think he's lying in that moment. I think he's like telling what he saw, and I think Rey seems like she believes it in that moment. So for me, I wrote it as an honest revelation and as an honest kind of reaction to it, as opposed to a move in a game of chess." Now, he then goes on to explain that he has nothing to do with episode 9. Somebody else could come in and write that all differently. But in his mind, Kylo Ren was telling the truth. I know that's been a big point of controversy. Is he lying to her about the parents? And I can see where he might have some motivation to do that, to get her to side with him.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's easy for him to lie to her about. And in fact, just a little while before we started recording, my friend Seth had pretty much mentioned just that, that there's no reason for him to necessarily tell the truth. And saying this about her parents served the moment very well.
But sometimes the truth can be a better manipulator
than a
lie. And especially if that other person knows the truth, and then you can use that truth to spin something. He got her to admit, "My parents were nobody."
Yeah.
He made her say it, and then he responded to it. And so the argument, I think, too, is that she kind of knew she was in a state of denial, or she at least sensed it.
Yeah.
So...
Now, to be honest, from my perspective, I hope that it is true. I hope that this whole thing gets put behind her as a character. I hope that it gets put behind us as fans, because her parentage is something that ever since The Force Awakens, I've not given a damn about. And I've been really hopeful that she's not a Skywalker, she's not a Kenobi, she's not a...
Right.
Whatever other crazy fan theory has been out there, I was hoping that she came from no one notable.
Yeah.
I think that serves a whole lot of things very well.
It doesn't matter, and it would become a distraction. In my mind, it's the opposite of Snoke.
Yeah.
With Snoke, it's a distraction not knowing anything about him. With Rey, then you're kind of diminishing her strengths as a character, and you know, you're making her a byproduct of something or somebody else.
Right. I mean, everybody's been saying about the thing of her is that, well, you know, the bloodline in Skywalkers is so strong, and then, you know, where'd she come? Well, if that line was strong, there could be another strong line as well. And, you know,
And what did the Force do before the Skywalkers came along?
Yeah, right.
You know, there's got to be,
so I have no problem
if the Force
with that
is connected to everything, then it can pop up anywhere.
Yeah. The force itself is not necessarily connected to any certain lineage or parentage. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, from what we've seen in Legends, that sometimes you have Jedi who, or anyone who is strong in the force who does have kids who are strong in the force, sometimes they don't.
Right. Right. Now, if only they had done a blood test and got a midichlorian count.
Moving along.
Sorry, I had to throw that in there.
One more little one before we get to the two big ones that I think are going to dominate the rest of the conversation here. Ryan Johnson says that Phasma may still be alive. And Mark Hamill has also chimed in and said he agrees, and a few other cast members have as well. Again, because Rian Johnson is not writing episode 9, he has nothing to do with it. He said, basically, hey, someone else can come in and do whatever they want with it. We know Phasma's armor was made from Palpatine's old yacht that we saw in The Phantom Menace. She can take blaster bolts. If she can take blaster bolts, she can probably take falling down into some sort of fiery debris and then getting up and hopping on a shuttle or something. Maybe her face is a little burned up from where her helmet was cracked open and her eye was exposed. But
and evidently, I did read somewhere too that Gwendolyn Christie has a plan for bringing her back.
Yes.
So who knows?
That's not entirely surprising, but
you know, while it aggravates me a little bit that they've, quote, done away with this character twice now. I do hope they bring her back because, again, I think she's a character with a lot of potential. I think she's a really cool character, and I'd love to actually see her do something. We didn't see much of anything in this film other than 20 seconds of a great fight. But that said, they really wasted a couple of opportunities, and at this point, I'm kind of over it.
Exactly. You know? That's where I'm at. Okay, you know what? You've had two chances. You bowled them both up, so move on. Pick somebody new because, I mean, I wanted her to be a big character, a really bad character, and I really wanted that. I mean, I have a shirt. I mean, I like the character's armor. I think it's awesome. We got a novel out of her, and now it's like you've wasted her twice. It's like, my God.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think it's that her scene was that bad. It wasn't that bad. I mean, when you look at it, and again, this is something we can go into in more depth on another episode, but when you look at what the First Order was doing, there would not have been very much for her to do throughout the entire film anyway. She didn't have an opportunity
to have
any importance until later in the film. And I guess I would be more okay with them bringing her back and maybe actually doing what they promised us they were going to do in this one, which I think is where a lot of people got upset, is we were told she'd be more prominent, she'd have more screen time. I think she actually had less screen time. But better that than in the prequels where we had basically a villain of the week. I mean, Palpatine was over top of all of them, but we had one in the first one and he died, and we had another one in the second one and he died, and another one in the third one and he died. It's like, well, give us something that's going to stick around a while.
Yeah.
And I understand where you're coming from too, Lou. I mean, it's like, if you're not going to do anything with her, just forget her and move on. I mean, let's move on to something that becomes meaningful instead of this constant tease. It feels like
if you bring her back now and you make her really powerful and strong and a really good, you know, evil villain, it's like, well, where was she last time then? I mean, if she's this badass, why wasn't she badass in the first two movies, you know?
And yet Boba Fett's popular, and yet Darth Maul, who was killed off in the first movie, came back and was kind of this downtrodden, stepped upon villain who kept getting beat over and over again, and people loved him.
I mean, there's definitely a precedent within Star Wars to revive villains. And the thing is that I wanted to love Phasma. When we first started seeing stuff before The Force Awakens and this imagery of Phasma and hearing about Gwendolyn Christie having the character and such, I was really excited about it, and I went out and I bought the action figures and the Black Series figures and all this stuff, and I was really, really on board with it. And then The Force Awakens, big letdown. And then we got, you know, in this interim between the movies, we got the Phasma novel, which I really liked, and it gave this incredible backstory to the character. And I'm thinking, oh, we have they're really setting this character to be up to be a solid badass. And so she's definitely going to do something meaningful in this movie. And even Gwendolyn Christie was talking up her role in this film. And then The Last Jedi comes and Phasma's gone again. And I just think there was a lot of wasted opportunity with what could have been a really cool character with it.
All right, we got to move on. But Lou, any last thoughts before we do on Phasma?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. All right, so here's the stuff that I think is a little bit upsetting. I'm going to rattle off all of this real quick and just to try to get through it for the sake of speed, and then we're going to dive into actually discussing it. So the first of these two points is pretty short. Rian Johnson has confirmed that there was no pre-planned overarching story that he had to adhere to in the film. There was not a treatment for all three movies. He came in and he wrote this one. And yeah, he talked to Abrams a little bit, blah, blah, blah. But this was his, and he didn't have any story milestones that he had to hit. So that's number one. Number two, Rian Johnson has talked about Snoke's death. And I've got a series of quotes here, and then we're going to come back to all of this. On why to have him die in this film as opposed to in episode 9, he said, "When I was working on the character of Kylo, I came to a place where I thought the most interesting thing would be to knock the shaky foundation out from under him at the beginning of this movie. By the end of the film, he's gone from being a wannabe Vader to someone who's standing on his own feet as a complex villain taking the reins. I thought it would be a really good setup going into the next movie. But then the question is, what place would Snoke have at the end of that? That made me realize the most interesting thing would be to eliminate that dynamic between the quote emperor and pupil so that all bets are off going into the next one. That also led to the possibility of this dramatic turn in the middle, which could also be a really powerful connection point between Kylo and Rey." Now, on the effect that this would have on fan theories, and the fan theories now being rendered moot, he says, "I do think it's interesting. I never want to poo-poo the fans coming up with theories. It's part of the fun of being a Star Wars fan. If there's a place for it in another story, I hope it gets told." On the lack of backstory for Snoke, he says, "It would have stopped any of these scenes dead cold if he had stopped and given a 30-second speech about how he's Darth Plagueis. It doesn't matter to Rey. If he had done that, Rey would have blinked and said, 'Who?' And the scene would have gone on." And then he later points out, "And I'm not saying he's Darth Plagueis." And then finally, on whether the lack of knowing Snoke's plan, going back to that overarching story arc, was the reason to kill him off. No. Yeah, that's not really the driving force behind it. But I did definitely think the notion behind this movie, for me, from the start, was to evolve Kylo Ren into a complicated, more solid villain. Someone who takes the reins and steps up and is no longer just pretending to be Vader, but has become his own version of a formidable force. And going into episode 9, that's the strongest launching pad. That's where you want to put your money down. And if you're dealing with a superior of his, that just seemed less interesting to me than clearing the deck so Kylo can be the main guy. And it gives an opportunity for a big dramatic beat that's really interesting, and we get to have some fun with him. So, real quick, my thoughts, and I'm going to throw it over to you guys. I this is why it's important. This is why it's critical to have an overarching story arc. Say what you will about the prequels, and I have voiced my complaints on many occasions, but George Lucas at least had an idea for all three of them as an overall story. I was really shocked to find that they didn't have something like that for this one. I thought Rian Johnson was just coming in to write the screenplay based on the story points that were already outlined. You can't have, and especially regarding Snoke, you can't have the first director and writers, because really it's a writer thing. You can't have the first writers come in and introduce something saying, "This is important." And then have the next writer come in and say, "Yeah, I disagree with that. Let's kill him off." You can't have this bouncing back and forth. What if JG comes back and says, "Well, no, Kylo Ren was only supposed to be around for like maybe a movie and a half. I'm going to kill him off and we'll have a third big bad guy come in." You can't do that. You need to have, like, if you're going to do a trilogy, you need an idea for the trilogy.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I was astounded when I heard this news that there was no plan overall. I mean, how do you make a trilogy without knowing where the endpoint's going to be for the trilogy?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense at all to me. I mean, I would have thought they would have had this planned out with JJ from the beginning when he did, you know, The Force Awakens, that these are the milestones we got to hit for episodes 8 and 9. This is where the story's going to wrap up. Maybe we don't know all the details of how we get there, but this is kind of what the story's going to be. And there's still room to change that, still room to mold that ending, you know, throughout this process. But you need to have one set of writers write this whole thing, come to the end, and be satisfied with it. Have different directors, sure. But one story, kind of like they're going to do with the next trilogy with Rian Johnson. It's yours. You take this. You do what you want to with it. You have 3 movies to do what you want, and he's going to plan that out. That's going to be good.
But if the next director in the Rian Johnson trilogy comes in and says, yeah, you know what? I think it'd be better to have this pupil step up and be the next bad guy. This first bad guy you had, I'm just going to write him out. I think that's where Rian Johnson or the story group at that point, whoever, can walk in and say, no, we've got this outlined out already. There's a destination for that character. You can't do that. And to me, this just seems like you're erasing what the previous guy did because you didn't know what to do with it.
And obviously JJ is involved because he's a producer on this movie.
Yeah. Well, but a lot of times producers have varying levels of involvement though. So how involved is he actually?
Being the guy that's doing the next movie, you'd think he's got his hands in there at least a little bit because now he's got to write the next story.
Well, bit of news. He just released the story treatment for episode 9 Friday, the 15th, the day this was released. So that's been turned in now.
Okay.
So
you would think he'd have some level of viewing and went, oh no, now what?
He's like, oh crap, let me write this down.
Yeah, shoot, now what am I going to do? I don't know how you can do this. This doesn't. You know the saying, you know. Plan to fail to plan. Fail to plan, plan to fail.
Yeah,
like that's what they did. I mean, it's like
it's funny to me because this harkens back to the pilot episode of Lost when they were pitching the TV series. They had Matthew Fox. He was, you know, basically the main character, but it's an ensemble cast. And originally, he was going to die halfway through the 2-hour pilot. And the who was it? ABC, I think. Yeah, it was on ABC. The studio came in and said, "No, you can't do that. You cannot have the audience invest in a character and then demonstrate to them that their investment was absolutely worthless. You can't, that's not fair to the audience." I kind of feel like that's what was done here. They had us wonder about Snoke. You know, we've been having the two biggest community topics as far as coming up with theories and speculation for 2 years running now have been who is Snoke and where did Rey come from? All over the place. There are t-shirts for "Your Snoke Theory Sucks." It was highlighted on one of the audience members on, I think it was Jimmy Fallon. Like, oh yeah, look at the t-shirt out there. "Your Snoke Theory Sucks." It's a thing now.
Yep.
And now it's like, yeah, we were just messing with you. I don't like it. So we're just going to throw it away.
Yeah. And it just doesn't matter now. It has nothing to do with the story.
And yet in the story, Snoke is. So one of the things I caught on the second viewing of this is, regarding Luke's death at the end, because that's another point of controversy. You know, why would he just die when, you know, he's on an island somewhere and he's just fine? When Kylo and Rey first discover that they're talking to each other, Kylo says to Rey, "You're not doing this. The effort would kill you." Like, he's just figuring out, you're not doing this. Something else is causing this to happen. And we later find out that it's Snoke. When Luke does it, it's so draining to him that he basically, the premise is he dies of exhaustion. And that's another thing we can get into some other time. But Snoke is able to not only do it, but to have this happening over and over again with two other people simultaneously. There's an implication there that Snoke is incredibly powerful. So how did the Jedi, how did Palpatine, how did nobody know that this guy's around? Because he's at least as old as the original trilogy, if not the prequels. Oh, but we'll never know because we kind of killed him because as a goof, he couldn't predict what his pupil that he already knew not to trust was going to do to him.
Yeah.
Tim, you've been pretty quiet, probably because we've been talking so much.
No, that's fine. The whole overarching story issue, all we have to do is look to Marvel for the best practice. The
just reboot the continuity every 5 years.
Well, the no. I mean, the MCU has everything laid out. They have had everything laid out for years. They know what every movie is going to contribute to the end goal. And the end goal of this portion of the MCU is the Infinity War.
Right.
And every film since Iron Man has contributed to that. Every single film. Except
even Ant-Man.
Except probably Ant-Man. So, I mean, they have all had a purpose. And while the main storylines or the main plot lines of those individual films hasn't necessarily been mapped out, the story beats of the overall story have been. And so I think every individual writer and director has been told, tell the movie you want to tell. But one, it obviously has to fit within the universe that we're doing here. And two, you need to hit these, whatever, two or three main plot points that are bigger picture things. Beyond that, don't care what you do. It's cool by me. I think that this trilogy needed that.
I think we all assumed it had that.
I would have.
That's the thing.
Yeah, I would have liked to have thought that. So this was really shocking to me that there was no overarching story, that they're just kind of making it up as they go along. And that's actually a little disappointing. I mean, it, as a professional, and I don't work in the entertainment industry, but my gosh, everything that I do has a purpose and links to something else.
Yeah, your stuff, what you do, builds upon what was there before from prior professionals and things that they discovered and gets revised along the way. I mean, that's kind of what you do in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and you would just like to hope that there's something like that in this. And, you know, I think in George Lucas's vision of what a sequel trilogy would look like, he had that mapped out. And this is just a little disappointing that they didn't. Now, in the end, it may work out fine.
Let's hope so.
But it right now,
we don't have episode 9 yet.
But. Sure, but right now it feels a little disjointed. Now, looking at the Snoke thing, the first quote that you had there from Rian Johnson about how interesting it would be to essentially take this support structure away from Kylo and see how he does, I completely agree with that. Yes, I think that's absolutely a valid remark. But then there is this other piece that you guys mentioned that, hey, Snoke is very, very clearly powerful Force user. Yeah. I mean, without breaking a sweat or like really tapping himself out, I mean, this guy can shoot lightning out of his left earlobe if he had one. I don't think he does. but I mean, without even thinking about it. So just incredible power that this guy exuded and so casually.
Yeah.
And to be such an important pivotal character without telling us anything about where he comes from or who he is kind of, that's kind of a big deal.
That's what bothers me the most, Tim, is that we had the stuff that was foreshadowed in The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they talk about Snoke. They talk about the Knights of Ren. We talked about this on Random Chatter last night. You know, they talk about the Knights of Ren and what they were. And then, okay, well, we're getting more about that later, I guess, right? And then nothing.
Yeah.
I'm assuming, like, until we find out otherwise, the Knights of Ren were the Praetorian Guards.
That's my assumption also.
See, I figured it was going to be this other students that he was being taught with Luke. And
I think they
were now his Knights.
I think they are. And then became the Praetorian Guards.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean,
I'm not saying I like it.
Yep, that's a good theory, I guess. I mean, I never thought of it that way, but you're right. I mean, I wondered where they were from and who they were, but maybe that's them. But it seemed to me that if that was them, it seems like that they, I don't know, they were following Kylo, not Snoke, you know? I don't know. I mean, it could be, but we'll probably never get that answer now. And it seems like we wasted a lot of time and effort thinking about things that we're never going to get an answer to, not just because they don't want to talk about it, but because the next director threw it away.
Yeah.
And listen, I think there are two important points we need to make here. We all liked the movie a lot, we're all very happy Rian Johnson's doing an upcoming trilogy. All due respect to Rian Johnson. Okay. I think the decision to not have an overarching storyline was not his decision.
Correct.
And I think that the writing that he did was good. I think it just needed to, like, he needed to have then written the first one too, in order for this stuff to really work as well as it needed to work. I don't have any ill will toward Rian Johnson at all. I am a fan. Oh, right. I'm a fan of his other work.
And too. As a director, he knocked this thing out of the park.
Oh, yeah.
I thought the visuals and the direction of this was absolutely incredible. And so after seeing this, mm-hmm. I even kind of compartmentalized my feelings about this movie, which I think had more to do with writing than anything else, and really looking at things from purely a directorial perspective. I am so confident now in what he's going to do with the upcoming Thrawn trilogy. it's incredible. It's insane. Yeah. I think he's going to do an amazing job.
And that kind of comes back to what I was saying back a few minutes ago, that, you know, I had problems with things in the movie, you know, choices they made and what they chose to tell us and didn't tell us. Mm-hmm. But I loved the movie. The movie was done well. It was technically a great movie. The story in itself was good. I wanted more. I wanted the different things to happen, but the story was great, and the movie was awesome.
And that's the thing. There seemed to be a lot of, there are complaints about things that were in the movie, and there were complaints about things that were not in the movie. And we had the same thing with The Force Awakens. My biggest problems are about the things that are not in the movie. I have some complaints about the things that are in the movie, but to me, those don't bother me that much. I can explain away most of those things. Again, I'm a former Lost fan. I can explain away anything. But it's the stuff that's not in the movie that we were basically led to believe we should be investing in Snoke as a villain. The second thing I want to make clear, aside from not faulting Rian Johnson per se, is we don't need to have backstories on everything. Okay. We talked about Rey. We don't need to know who her parents are. They can be nobody. In fact, that's probably for the best. We don't need to know anything more about Rose's backstory, other than that she had a really strong connection with her sister Paige, and Paige died at the beginning of the movie, and how that affects Rose, etc. We don't need to know absolutely everything about everything in the galaxy. And we've kind of gotten used to it because there's so much extracurricular content, but it's not that we're expecting that. It's that with Snoke in particular, there's a specific reason. There are very specific reasons why we kind of felt like there's more there that we need to know about, because it also affects the nature of the entire First Order. It affects Kylo Ren. It affects the nature of the Force and Force users in the galaxy, which is a piece of context that we are only now starting to get some tiny pieces of, and I think perhaps insufficiently so. There are a lot of things that knowing about Snoke specifically affects. And that's why I think this is such a loss.
Here's something I'd like to throw out there. Just a little food for thought. Kind of some comparative analysis. We look at the original trilogy. We had the Emperor. We didn't know anything about the Emperor.
That's true.
We didn't get a backstory on Palpatine until the prequel trilogy came out.
Yep.
So we knew nothing about him. Now, he did perpetuate as a villain. We really saw him in Empire Strikes Back, and then his demise was in Return of the Jedi, spoiler. But we didn't know anything about him.
Well, here's what we did know. As the Emperor, he ran an empire. Mm-hmm. He was the lead political figure for not just the military, but for the entire galaxy as well. So he ran the military, and he ran the civilian population for the entire galaxy. So we knew that. We knew he was a Force user, and that he had trained Darth Vader. Darth Vader was his pupil, etc. And you're right. We didn't really need to know that much more about it, because we were also learning about the nature of the Force and all that. But we also had more context about what was going on in the galaxy too. The galaxy was made up of a bunch of different worlds that were all being oppressed by this empire that whose umbrella they all fell under. Right now, we still don't even really know, you know, how many worlds are there out there that are New Republic? what is Hosnian Prime blew up, and that was the capital planet, and that sucks for all of those people. But I mean, there are how many hundreds of thousands of gazillions of other planets in the galaxy? So like, what's going on there? What is the state of just everyday life for everyday people in the galaxy? Because that kind of it kind of matters. We had all of that context in the first one, and we didn't in the second one. So in this one, does Snoke have any political power?
And there was so little stuff given to us in the first trilogy, but it came across well.
Right. I mean, and now we know more too.
Right. Yeah.
We know more about the nature of the Force. So now we have a kind of some context to which we can apply Snoke and say, well, how does this fit into what we do already know?
Yeah.
We didn't have that the first time around because we were still learning about everything the first time around.
Well, and I think in a lot of ways we still are here. I think we also have to recognize that The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi are back-to-back films. There was essentially no time gap between Episode 7 and Episode 8.
No, 8 was basically the escape from 7.
Right.
Like the whole movie, that was the plot. They're escaping from 7.
So there would not have been a whole lot of opportunity to reflect on what is the state of the rest of the Republic when you have this group of folks from the Resistance who are trying to get away from the First Order after this major victory, but now basically they know they're going to get their asses kicked.
But I think that's why that was a bad choice.
So you have, well, and it could have been a bad choice, but it also does make it very compelling. And even though really a lot of this film was kind of a prolonged chase scene, at least kind of the background thread to it, it did keep some of that urgency flowing through the entire thing that, you know, and hey, the First Order keeps picking us off and we're running out of fuel and we have this thing to do, which I still completely don't understand. I get what they were trying to do with this whole tracking thing, but it does, that little backstory doesn't sit well with me.
Okay, real quick, just a quick tangent. I'll let you finish. The hyperspace tracking was actually mentioned in Rogue One by Jyn Erso. If you fast forward to 1 hour, 45 minutes, 26 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Okay.
When she's going through the computer, there's all those code names. It cuts away to some battle stuff, and then it cuts back, and she says hyperspace tracking, navigation systems, and then it cuts away again.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
It was part of the Tarkin initiative. Yeah.
Wow. All right. Good catch there, Eric.
I can't take credit for it. Someone on the internet found it. Pablo Hidalgo confirmed it.
The internet? What?
I know. It's what are you talking about? I'll explain it later. You believe it's those a guys? Crazy place. It's a silly place.
But I mean, really, when we start to look at this trilogy analogous to the original trilogy, there are a lot of unknowns that we have here that we also did not know in the original trilogy. The original trilogy, we didn't understand what this whole Darth thing was. Here, we don't understand yet the origin of the name of Kylo Ren. We don't know where it came from. We don't know how he got it. We don't know if it has some kind of meaning similar to Darth. So there's an analog there. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a backstory to the Emperor. We don't have a backstory to Snoke. I think things will eventually flesh themselves out. Maybe not even in this trilogy. You know, the original trilogy didn't answer a lot of those questions for us. We got those questions answered through sometimes fan theories, a lot of books, which became legends, but then some things did get secured within canon. Then we had the prequel trilogy, which answered a lot of that stuff for us.
But we're not going to get a prequel trilogy for this. And two things to keep in mind. Number one, it's a different type of storytelling back then than it is now. I keep going back to on the Tantive IV, Vader walks into that corridor. You don't need a backstory. You know he is the bad guy, and he just represents pure evil. Now we are so used to psychoanalyzing our villains that if we don't have some sort of an idea of what their motivation is, what their intent is, where they're coming from, psychologically speaking, then they're not interesting to us. And so the nature, and that's not a Star Wars thing, that's a sociological thing. The nature of storytelling, modern storytelling, it's a very different creature than it was back then. So the expectations are different. That's the first thing. The second thing is that given the apparent power level of Snoke combined with the bits and pieces, the tidbits we've gotten indicating that he's supposed to have been around for a long time, kind of raises questions now about the original trilogy and perhaps even the prequel trilogy. How could someone as powerful as Palpatine not have any clue that there's another dark side user? And if this guy's been around that long, why wasn't he doing anything back then? And right. How did, you know, it starts to expand these questions purely based on Snoke's power level.
There
it starts to expand these questions backwards into the past, and it starts to change that story too. Now we have questions about the original trilogy.
There could be some opportunity in episode 9, I think, for a little bit of reflective to talk about Snoke in kind of a bigger picture beyond just this puppet master that we saw him as, the impact of his death. Most directly being the fact that Kylo Ren is in no way a leader.
Yeah, that's another topic I want to get to.
Yeah, we have not seen many good leadership qualities come out of Kylo Ren. I mean, he's an instrument to be used, not one to lead others. And so I think we're going to see some of those problems. Essentially the same thing as Darth Vader. Darth Vader, sure, he could have commanded the 501st. That would be great. But Darth Vader could not be the administrator of an empire. That is not his persona. That's not his role.
No.
So I think we're going to see the same thing here with Kylo Ren and with how he deals with some things. And it depends on the perspective that they take with episode 9. And they have an awful lot of things that they have to wrap up. There are things that they have to do and things that I, from our perspective, would be nice to do. I'm a little ambivalent about some things because to me, I think just kind of knowing what they've done in the past, there are certain questions that I kind of dismissively say, oh, that's easy to answer in a book. But
yeah,
not every Star Wars fan reads the books. And so that's not fair. Right. To a lot of the Star Wars fans to just have an assumption that, oh, we're going to fill in the gaps with the book. And I think there's some incredible novel opportunities. Even half an hour of this film created some amazing novel opportunities. And we have 2.5 hours of film that gave us some unanswered questions or little threads towards something that can then explode into a book or a series of books. And for us, maybe that's great, but for Chris, and Chris is a diehard Star Wars fan, but Chris doesn't read the novels. And there's a lot of other diehard fans out there that don't read the novels. So that's kind of unfair to them.
Yeah. And by the way, I want to point this out because Chris is not on the show, but I know we have audience members who are fans of his. He was not all that enamored with this movie. I don't think he's seen it a second time yet, but he was not all that thrilled based on what I've seen him post in Slack so far.
Yeah.
But, there are two, I know people are going to hate these. There are two theories that have popped up that could allow us to get a little bit more information about Snoke in the films, perhaps. The first one is that Snoke, again, being so powerful, has found a way to transfer his consciousness into another body or somewhere else. And as he's describing all of these things that Kylo Ren is doing, apparently Snoke to Rey, but actually to Snoke.
No.
Not quite. Snoke knew this was going on and transferred his consciousness into another body. And that this was Snoke's way of forcing Kylo Ren to take that last step to, you know, kill the master, become the master himself as part of Kylo Ren's growth. And that Snoke is somehow going to continue to use and manipulate Kylo Ren. So that was all planned. And the little bit of this theory that I do like is it would explain why Kylo Ren was able to kill Snoke that way and Snoke not detect it, Snoke not be able to read his intentions, because Kylo Ren really was just an emotional child that was a puppet of Snoke. Snoke knew exactly the fact that his intentions were kind of flip-floppy and that, you know, he wasn't entirely dedicated to what he was doing and he was full of conflict.
Kylo Ren is incredibly unstable.
Right.
Everything we've seen about him reads instability.
And Snoke is not so stupid as to not see that. So this theory at least does feed into the idea that this was a further manipulation by Snoke. Snoke knew exactly what Kylo Ren was doing, allowed him to do it so that Kylo Ren would then step up and take the next step and go forward. So that's one theory. The other theory is if you look at the mosaic tile on Octo with the little couple of inches of water along it, check it out when you go back to watch the movie for a second viewing. There is what appears to be a being sitting, meditating, and there, half of the mosaic is light, half of it's dark, and the kind of bulbous head shape of this being kind of makes it look like Snoke. There is an actual theory out there, I think I saw it on screenrant.com, I'm not sure, where Snoke is the first Jedi. How he could live this long, or if he's transferred his consciousness a few times or whatever, that would require more picking apart. But the basic premise is that's why he's so powerful, being that he was the first Jedi, and now Rey has the books from the tree. You know, now we can learn a little bit more about, maybe even Rey will learn more about him in episode 9, and that's where things go from there.
Okay.
And this can very logically lead us to the fact that Jar Jar was Snoke.
No.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
No.
I'm totally convinced with this theory. We're good. We can end the episode now. Thanks, folks.
Hey, Eric, you know, I think Tim lied to us. He's using the drugs early.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think so, too. All right. Why don't we, we'll move along here. There are a few other things, but any last comments before we move into the fun facts and trivia?
No, I mean, I need to see the movie another time to really let my thoughts solidify, I guess, but
yeah,
I'm sure we'll talk about this many more times.
Yes. Remind me offline and I'll give you guys some things to look for in your second view. I guess I could list them on the show here, but yeah, we'll talk about them next time around.
Yeah.
There are some things I picked up on the second viewing I didn't pick up on the first viewing. So,
okay.
But fun facts and trivia. I'll throw some of them out kind of lightning around here. There's a sea serpent swimming in the water on Octo that a lot of people didn't notice.
Yeah, I saw that.
There's a kind of a blooper.
The sea Finn serpent isn't the thing that Luke milked, was it?
No.
No.
What the hell was the purpose of that scene? Nessie. My gosh.
Yeah, I get the purpose of it, but a little creepy.
Yeah.
I mean, a little weirded out by that.
I just kind of let it go and just kept on with the movie.
That was six seconds we could have done without.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's 20 minutes of cutscenes, but they left that in. bit of a blooper, Finn's backpack, when he first meets Rose, kind of bounces around a little bit. Sometimes it's outside the escape pod. Sometimes it's like right on the entryway of the escape pod. And then when she stuns him and he goes flying into the escape pod, it's on the seat in the escape pod.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I'll watch that.
Let's see what else. Luke's door. The door to Luke's hut. Take a good look at it, and it might explain why Luke is not able to leave the island on his own. I mean, he could have climbed into the Falcon, I guess, but all right. Okay. So just look for it. Trivia question. What is the only Star Wars movie on its opening weekend that did not open in first place? And what movie did open in first place instead? This would be very easy to find on the internet, of course, but
yeah, I'm sure we could Google it, but
yeah,
What movie didn't open in first place?
I'm going to say it's The Phantom Menace.
Okay.
And, gosh, what release then?
Which was 1999.
I don't know what release then. Jurassic Park, maybe?
Jurassic Park, I think, was before that.
Yeah, it was before that. I'd have a hard time believing that Phantom Menace didn't open at number one with all the hype and the demand for that for so long.
Yeah, Lou's got you there. It was not the Phantom Menace.
All right. Then it had to be Attack of the Clones.
It was not Attack of the Clones.
Damn.
See, I was going to say either Attack of the Clones or Empire.
It was not Empire.
No.
Well, there's only a few more movies left.
Tim, we're narrowing it down, Tim. We'll get the answer pretty quick.
There's only one Star Wars movie that nobody really knew to go see the first time around, and that's the original Star Wars movie. It did not open at number one. It came in a close second.
Oh, I thought it did.
It came in a close second.
Okay.
But it did not open at number one. Any guesses?
Oh, God. What was it? Around 77? I have no idea.
It brought in $1.5 million, and the first place movie brought in $1.7 million. So it was close. Now, keep in mind, 1977. Yeah. So that's like $16 trillion, but...
Yeah, I mean, ticket prices by then were what, $250?
Yeah. Yeah.
Who was the star of the first place movie?
I didn't see it. Burt Reynolds, I think. See, now I got to use the internet. IMDb.
Yeah, give us a hint on this. We might be able to get it.
Rocky Horror Picture. Burt Reynolds. Yes, it was. Burt Reynolds.
Who else is it?
Guys, be quiet, audience members. I can't hear them over you screaming at the podcast right now. Burt Reynolds, Sally Field.
Smokey and the Bandit?
Smokey and the Bandit. Very good.
Really? Wow. That was the same time frame?
That was the number one movie that weekend. It opened at 1.7 over Star Wars. Now, it only went on to make $127 million, though at that time, again, that was a lot of money.
Sure.
But Star Wars obviously did beat that out.
And wasn't Burt Reynolds one of the folks who auditioned for the role of Han Solo?
I want to say yes. I think he was.
I want to say yes, too. I think we covered this in our Yo Leia episode.
Yo Leia.
Yeah.
Eric's rolling his eyes, I can tell.
So that's the fun facts and trivia, a handful of things to look for in The Last Jedi. And also there's some books on the Millennium Falcon at the end, if you can spot them. I forgot to look.
Yes, I saw those.
I saw the books, yeah.
There's a trivia question for you that you can ask your friends. And then once again, we're skipping the feedback, but we kind of did mention what Bob said earlier. So Bob, thanks a lot for that, that perspective on the film. That was a very concise, well-worded way to put that.
Yeah, we got some, really good feedback over the last few days, and we don't want to discourage it. Obviously there's just a ton that we are trying to cover, right now, and we will definitely get to it. Yeah. We are holding on to it, and I mean we may even just end up doing like a feedback episode.
I was gonna say we might have to.
Why don't you listen, people out there, especially the people who've been contributing in Slack, thank you, because that there have been some incredible conversations there. A little tricky to keep up with at some points, but if you want some of that feedback to show up on the show, email it to us instead.
Yeah, email is the best way for us to track
going. It. Yes, it's much easier to organize it and track it.
And save it for later.
Yeah,
it's hard to save stuff in Slack.
Yeah.
So to do you can send us the emails to echobase@randomchatter.com. Best way to get a hold of all three of us.
And you can find us online, facebook.com/randomchatternetwork. On Twitter, Random Chatter is the main account for the network. Echo Base Podcast is the one for this show. And I am at Eric Blythe. That's ERIKBLYTHE. Tim, where can we find you on Twitter?
At Qui-Gon Tim. That's Tim with two M's.
And Lou?
And just my name. It's Lou Secchi, Lousecki.
All right, and you can find all of our shows over at randomchatter.com. I think this is going to be the last episode of Echo Base for 2017. We just posted our last episode of Random Chatter for 2017. I am going to have some of the microcasts coming out. I will probably continue with the new stuff. And I, Tim, you said there's a lot of stuff to cover. I have an outline for the next 31 episodes of Aren't You a Little Short for a Podcast?
Wow.
31.
That's awesome. A little ambitious.
Yeah. And that's all only on The Last Jedi. There were other things that I was also going to talk about that are now getting pushed back. So, yeah. So we've got a lot of stuff. Keep going over to randomchatter.com. I know there's at least one big blog post coming soon too. We're going to have a few more things through the end of the year, but for the flagship shows, we will return at the beginning of January.
Liz and I are hoping to get our Last Jedi review on Movie Rampage done in fairly short order here. Although, okay. Eric, I might need your assistance with editing because of I only have one hand, and it's my non-dominant hand. So,
well, you've got that robotic prosthetic coming, right?
Aren't you hooked up with it? Are you cosplaying as Anakin again?
Anakin or Luke or...
That's right.
We'll do that. And you know, the other thing I think we need to do is get some of our other network hosts on either Echo Base or maybe getting sidetracked and kind of throw in their thoughts on The Last Jedi. Yes. Too. We'll kind of do some crossover stuff.
Yeah,
exactly. Speaking of that, we mentioned it last night on Random Chatter. I think we're going to try to do a network wide roundtable on The Last Jedi.
Oh, even better. Excellent.
Probably in the beginning of the year, we'll try to do that and get everybody's thoughts.
Awesome.
That would be a lot of fun. Folks, if you like what you are hearing, please tell other people, spread the word and help support us. Leave us some great reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever else it is you might be getting your podcasts. Click on all the stars, type in some good stuff, which will encourage other folks to listen to the stuff that we do here. Friends, family, coworkers, total strangers, folks, you know, people who are Star Wars fans. So tell them about us. We really appreciate that. And we've been growing our fan base some. Stepping into the next topic here, which is how you can contribute to us financially, which is through patreon.com/randomchatter. Our first perk, our first level perk, which is for $1 a month, gets you access to our Slack community. And just in the last few days here, we have had 3 new people join our Slack community. So I want to get a quick welcome out to them. I think there's another Jared that's in there. There's like we needed duplicates of all these names. We just have to start naming everyone thing one, thing two, et cetera.
No more Mikes and no more Jareds.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if your name is Mike or Jared, we'll still certainly take you, but we may rename you just to give you fair notice. And really, Slack has really taken off. I mean, it's Slack has always been busy and we've had these terrific discussions. But just as we've seen, obviously, this huge uptick in social media and other places talking about The Last Jedi, it has really blown up in Slack. And so we have a whole channel dedicated to it. And that has had bleed over into our general channel and our Star Wars channel and other stuff. So there has just been some really great discussion, some great speculation. And if you want a place where really a lot of opinions are being respected, that is definitely a place to come. You know, it's tough sometimes, yeah. I think, to be out there in the wild on social media and, you know, go onto Twitter and post a thought or an opinion. And some of this stuff is, I don't know, some of the fandom seems a little divisive, I think. And some people are just jerks, but also it's just we're all very passionate about things. In our Slack community, it's really great. I mean, there's such a terrific idea exchange and someone will bring up a perspective that you've never really even considered before. And maybe sometimes your first reaction is, gosh, I don't agree with that. But then you can come around and it's a good opportunity for at least some longer form discussion, to have right. on
and
some
focused.
Things. Yeah.
Focused too. I mean, you don't have all mm-hmm. of the extra noise from Twitter or Facebook.
Yeah.
And you're exactly right. I mean, even the stuff in our Slack community, people are passionately for the movie or passionately against it or passionate liking some things and not others. And some of the debates back and forth about it are pretty specific and pretty impassioned, mm-hmm. but they're all civil. And I say debate. They're not fights. Yeah,
exactly.
They're not fights. Yeah. They're analysis.
Yeah.
And everybody has been really civil about it. It's been there's a lot of stuff in there. But wow. But it's been awesome because, like you said, it's not about being divisive, it's about sharing. And everybody that's in those Star Wars channels are fans of Star Wars, and we all share that.
Yeah.
And so we have common ground to start on and to talk about these things. So, I mean, you're going to get your dollar's worth in the first hour. Okay.
You really Trust will. Me. And I mean, to me, that's definitely worth the dollar a month. I mean, there are days sometimes where I just like ignore Twitter because I don't want to deal with a lot of jerks. And I'll just kind of, you know, hang out in Slack and have good conversations with people. So it really is a great community, and that's definitely worth the dollar a month. But it certainly goes up from there. You can do $2 a month, $3, $5, $10, $15. Head over to patreon.com/randomchatter. You see the different perks. So for every level of perk that we have out there, you give us a contribution and we give you something back. So sometimes it's exclusive content. Sometimes it's early access to shows. There's a whole list of things that are on there. So please go check that out, and we greatly appreciate it. It helps kind of keep the lights on around here, and it contributes to the entire network. So we are expanding shows. We are expanding content areas. You know, this is not our only Star Wars show now. We have Aren't You a Little Short for a Podcast, which has some Star Wars content. And fundamentally, I think really all of our hosts are Star Wars fans, so you usually end up seeing little bits of Star Wars getting sprinkled into other shows here and there as well. But we also do cover a lot of other topics through them. So please check that out. And you know, you don't have any commercials in any of the Random Chatter shows because you folks, our listeners, are our sponsors. And the way to do that is through patreon.com/randomchatter.
And finally, the music you hear in this podcast is The Imperial March by Cell Dweller and The Force Theme by Scandroid. A great artist with two different personas there. It's actually the same guy doing two different styles of music. I highly recommend checking out both catalogs.
Is he like schizophrenic or something? Or like different personality? multiple personality also, disorder or something?
There's also Circle of Dust, which is a little more heavy metal industrial. And then there's now another one he just launched. I don't remember the name of it, but it's more kind of ambient electronic kind of stuff. He's a busy guy. He's a Sounds busy it. Guy. We interviewed him on Quartcast way back in the day. And some good stuff there. But that's it. Thanks for hanging out with us. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great 2017. Look forward to more Star Wars in 2018. We'll see everybody then.